It's Darren Winston's Book Report. Hi, Darren.
Hey, Jill.
What's going on out there?
Lots. Let's see. This morning I was taking apart what was left or what is left of a second Shakespeare folio. I got it many years ago, probably somewhere between 15 and 20 years ago. A lovely older gentleman that I befriended, and he sort of took me under his wing in terms of basically I would go to his apartment to look at his books. He was, you know, he was a longtime collector, but he had a penchant for buying problematic things. So he would find, I remember there was a copy of Dune, Frank Herbert, first edition. It's a fairly modern book. I think it's from the 70s, but very expensive book in the first edition. And he had a copy with a defective dust jacket. And on a book like that, that just means everything. And there might have been other issues, but that was the big one. And, you know, people want that book. They want a great copy because it's not so, it's rare, but it's not so rare that you can't wait for a better one. So anyway, lots of funky books, things that were very cool but had issues, including this Shakespeare second folio, which had, I think, 33 of 300 leaves still intact, which meant literally 33 pages. And there were sections from, I think, All's Well That Ends Well, The Tempest, Julius Caesar, Cymbeline, and maybe one more. And I've had them for years, and sometime, maybe 10 years ago, I thought it would be cool to mat them up, because if you know, to buy any of the folios is at least hundreds of thousands. It'll go into millions if you're buying the first folio.
And the folio is...
That was the first time that Shakespeare's plays were collected in one big book, sort of a greatest hits. In theory, by his friends. There's introductions by Ben Jonson, among others. Of course, I can't remember the date of the first folio. My head is all about the second folio today, which was 1632. I think the first folio was... I'll get it wrong. I want to say 1620, but anyway... So I had this little chunk of the second folio that I got from this fellow, who essentially, I think he just gave me a pile of stuff. Also other, maybe other 17th century material and some 18th century, just a series of really cool and interesting things that were a huge learning curve for me, because I got to look at these books and say, okay, this book has a wing number. What does that mean? Okay, wing is an important bibliography for books published in the 17th century. So here was a wing book, and I could understand how it was collated.
But
that
here's
sort of
a
thing.
Really relevant, and it's the same reason that you do an internship. And it's the same reason you put your hands on. You know, first you read about all of these things or learn it, and then you have to actually touch it and say, oh, wow, this is how it actually connects and why this and it's a completely different dynamic or dimension.
Exactly.
So that's what's – all right. So
it's like putting your hand in the fire. You know, I suddenly had in the case of – there was this one book by a fellow called Richard Somebody. It'll come back to me. And it was published in the 17th century, and it looked fantastic. It's an amazing title page, I believe, with a ship going down in flames. And it was – I think it was some religious treatise, and it was all about everybody burning in hell or something like that. But the book had some value. He had written other books that were collected and had even more value. So again, to look at that book, say, here's a 300-year-old book. This is what 300-year-old paper looks like, smells like. These are the sorts of notes you might find in the margin in a contemporary hand, so I could suddenly see what handwriting looks like from 300 years ago, not only what they said, but how it was actually written, knowing it was written with a quill pen, not a Bic, or that sort of thing. So even seeing something written in a 300-year-old ink makes you think, okay, I've seen that in movies, read about it in books, but there it is. That's what it looked like. I know that he had a quill and he dipped it into some sort of an inkwell, and this is what came out. And you'll often see, and you see this into the 20th century, but as the level of the ink wears down, the writing gets lighter and lighter, and then suddenly it gets dark again because you know that it was dipped in. Anyway, I know I'm all over the place, but to your point, I suddenly had all of these things in a shopping bag that I could look at for days and weeks and months and try and understand what they were, why they were there. Some things took me a long time to understand why they were there, but I learned things like taking a sheep binding, a calf binding, a Morocco binding, all these different types of leather, and understanding why they were different, why they were prevalent in different periods of history, vellum bindings. And again, having it, feeling it, being able to recognize it now, you know, I go outside of this little group of books. Oh, there's another vellum book. There's sheep. That's a speckled calf. And then I found out, you know, how speckling was done, which is just a treatment to the leather for the binding. But back to the Shakespeare folio. So in the life of this book, someone had taken it apart, or a series of people. And one thing that has been done, and this probably continues to be done, is you take an entire play out of the greater book and you bind it up by itself. So you'll have a Merchant of Venice, it's let's say 20 pages, and you bind it up. And I don't know if that was done because there were other defective copies in our history and people wanted to figure out what they can make of them.
But it wasn't a full Merchant of Venice.
No, it would have been. It would have been. Okay. And the tricky thing is, for the most part, because the plays were printed consecutively, they weren't separated by a blank page. They weren't even separated by a title page. You simply had the end of Merchant of Venice in the middle of the page, and then All's Well That Ends Well, and I'm saying this out of order, would have started immediately.
In the middle of the page.
So you might bind up this copy of one of the books and you're looking at the very first page, which you would think would be the title page, and you've got a little bit of text above it, which, you know, obviously bothered some people. So the plays that just coincidentally happened to start at the top of the page and appear to be complete unto themselves sell for a premium, and the ones that start somewhere else, whether it's in the middle of a right-hand page or the middle of a left-hand page. If it's the middle of a left-hand page, your page numbers are going to be up in the top left-hand corner, so you can't really put it. It's going to look out of order, and you can't flip it around. So the 33 leaves that I got were clearly the dregs of the dregs, that they had cut out everything they could possibly make something out of. But weirdly, they didn't cut out Cymbeline, which is not everyone's
cup of tea,
or one that even jumps off people's tongues. But weirdly, there's a production of it I just read about recently going on. So someone somewhere, somebody cares. So my task today was to go through this finally and do a little bit of basically just making a list. I think there was four or five plays, how many leaves I have. I have matted and sold some in the past, so I had notes of those. And then I noticed all sorts of interesting bibliographic things, pages numbered incorrectly, where let's say it went from 350 to 351 to 252 to 353. So suddenly a 2 got dropped for a 3. And you know the text runs contiguously. So I make a little note of that. And then I found another leaf there was 2 leaves in a row numbered exactly the same. They were each 251 back with 252, and yet they were 2 different pages. So you wonder if when the typesetter was setting the type, he just forgot to change the page number. So he set the type, he had everything right, and then it wasn't until he was done with the second page, or actually it would have been the third and fourth page, they thought, uh-oh. And instead of going back and correcting it, which would have been a waste of paper and time, and he probably would have had his knuckles wrapped, he just changed it for the next one. And one of the interesting things about collecting books in the early days of printing is you just find these mistakes, which are just human error. What if his wife yelled from down the street that the toilet was plugged, so he forgot to put the page numbers in? So for the next 300 years, every copy of that book memorializes some hiccup.
Some event. And that's what's so interesting about history and looking back and comparing, whether it's in the printed form or, and I just, this is a total digression, but I don't know if you've noticed that vinyl is just the new black.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's the new orange. And you started from Shakespeare, we'll go from Shakespeare to records for a second.
Sure, happy to.
No, not for any other reason that's where you began.
Exactly.
And so you've watched the entire continuum of, we don't need vinyl. Who wants that?
And here we are again.
And here we are. So that's just for what it's worth. Back to your Shakespeare. Brush up your Shakespeare. What are we going, what happens now?
So now, in the spirit of using every possible piece of the chicken before you chuck it out, you know, down to the making soup out of the bones, I look at the leaves, and what I did I think, again, 10 or so years ago, was I started to just mat them up and say to people, instead of spending $1 million or 50,000, whatever, spend a couple of hundred and you have this piece of history. You've got a play you can choose from. In some cases, and this was a lot of work, but it was fun, I chose to mat leaves that had famous quotes in them so I could say, oh, there's the quote from Othello, whatever that quote might be. But the sort of person that goes into a rare bookshop or an old print shop or an antique store, they gravitate towards the old. There's some mojo there that they can or can't explain. We know that. So matting up or framing up these leaves is another way of saying, here's a piece of history. You've read this in high school. You might have been in some production, but this is the real McCoy. This is something that was printed before the Great Fire of London, you know, and you can find all these correlations in history and say, here's a piece of it. This is your, it's real. You can smell it. You can look at it. You can do whatever you want. And it's a, it's kind of a, if there were a gift shop from going back in time, this is the sort of thing that you might buy before you come back.
Great shades of Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly.
It's Darren Winston's Book Report.
Thanks, Jill.